Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paige St. John, who's a veteran investigative reporter with the Los Angeles Times' Sacramento Bureau. She was awarded the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting with the Sarasota Herald Tribune, where she exposed how Florida's weak oversight of the insurance industry created a financial house of cards for property owners. As a result of her reporting, homeowners were refunded millions of dollars and new state regulations were created. Her reporting for the Los Angeles Times focuses on the California prison system and state agencies in Sacramento. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paige St. John.
Glad to be with you, Ian.
And up to almost 30,000 inmates in California are on a hunger strike. And I take it that the prison officials don't designate it as an official hunger strike until they miss 9 meals. Is that the methodology?
Yes, we won't hit that milestone until dinner. This evening, Wednesday night, at which point inmates will have, if they have, continued in this, missed 9 consecutive meals. At the moment, we're at just under 29,000 inmates who are refusing at least 1 meal. The tally will change beginning tomorrow. We'll actually then be getting the count of people who are officially recognized as hunger strikers.
So when the state recognizes that reality, what changes?
A couple of things change. Principally, medical observation begins. That's when inmates will be observed in their cell for any signs of distress by medical staff. The federal receiver steps in at that point to begin its own oversight of the situation for those inmates. There's another milestone at 2 weeks when they're then seen by physicians and actually monitored. Unless an inmate is diabetic or has other medical risks, though, they'll just go for the next week and a half on observation.
And this hunger strike started in Pelican Bay, which apparently is the most draconian prison and perhaps the most isolated one as well.
It's the supermax of the prisons here in California. It's the most isolated. It's up near the Oregon border. And it has a security housing unit, what the inmates call the SHU, or solitary confinement, that has about a little bit more than 1,000 inmates who are held there without meaningful contact with other people, kept to 23 or so hours a day in a concrete cell without access to the outside, but for a brief exercise period every day. That is where the leaders of the protest are housed, but they then in turn have managed communications with inmate leaders at two-thirds of the prisons throughout the state, and hence the simultaneous statewide protest that began on Monday.
So the state, of course, are claiming that the perpetrators and instigators of this hunger strike are these hardcore lifers, as they refer to them, who basically trying to change the rules so that gang leaders will have more control over the prisons. And I'm curious to know how that could be the case. First of all, I'm curious to know how people locked away in these cells without daylight for 23 hours a day in these concrete bunkers could organize a hunger strike. And two, how could they be able to be responsible, if the prison authorities are to be believed, for organizing this statewide strike?
Yes. Well, first of all, they do not acknowledge that they are gang leaders. They, in fact, the representatives who have organized this protest, are also, two of them are also part of a pending federal class action lawsuit over solitary confinement, and say that they are not gang members, that they were incorrectly associated with a gang through a system that the state uses called a validation system. And so they deny that linkage. Despite the inability to easily communicate, they're allowed no phone calls. Every letter they send is read by prison censors, and there is no direct human contact with the outside world. They have managed to communicate to each other within these solitary confinement wards, to speak through drain pipes, to send messages on down the line onto tiny scraps of paper that have been rolled up and attached to tiny bits of string and kind of flung out to other between cells, and to get rather lengthy doctrines and manifestos printed then in by advocacy organizations on the outside and into their own newsletters and newspapers that then get mailed to inmates elsewhere through the regular mail. So it's a very slow process. It's kind of a widespread network. It's the same network that is used by the prison gangs that are so dangerous and that are calling murders on the streets and drug deals as well. So there's a light and dark side to this coin in terms of how it operates, but that's the same network that these organizers have used.
Again, I'm speaking with Paige St. John, who's a veteran investigative reporter with the Los Angeles Times of Sacramento Bureau. She was awarded the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting with the Sarasota Herald Tribune, and she reports for the Los Angeles Times, focusing on the California prison system and state agencies in Sacramento. And just last week, three federal judges denied Governor Jerry Brown's request to delay the court-ordered release of some 9,600 state prisoners. Jerry Brown apparently is making a deal with the private prisons, the Correctionals Corporation of America, to basically allow the state to continue keeping more than 8,200 inmates out of state. And so this is obviously an underlying reality, is it not? This clearly has something to do with the overall prison story. I mean, wouldn't you say that there's...
Oh, absolutely. The crowding seems to be at the core problem that besets California's prisons, that they hold still 150% of capacity. In other words, 50% more than they were designed to hold. A lot of inmates, two people in a cell that was built for one, for instance. And that complicates the ability to move people around, to separate gang members, to deliver adequate medical care, to deliver adequate mental health care. That's led to all of these federal lawsuits and federal orders, and now a return trip to the U.S. Supreme Court for the state as it tries to fight those orders. The governor just today had announced that they had extended another 3 years the contract with CCA, Corrections Corp of America, which houses inmates for the state in its private facilities elsewhere. The corrections folk tell me that that does not mean California will continue to use all of the capacity that it is just contracted for from CCA, but it does now have that safety valve if it chooses to. Even so, that would be not enough to meet the court order to reduce crowding. And even if it continues to keep inmates out of state, California has to shed, by the end of the year, about 9,600 inmates. Early releases, if so ordered by the federal courts, or some alternative if the state comes up with it.
But apparently, more than 10,000 additional Californians are being bunkered in jail, in county jails, right? Is that true?
No, not yet. That's one of the options the state had raised in its what it calls a protest plan,
right,
to contract or lease for space within county jails. Los Angeles and Alameda counties were the two that the state had discussed using, mm-hmm, but those contracts have not yet been signed. And as I said, that was the state's protest plan. The governor said he did not want to do that, but had to produce a plan to the judges, and that was what they put in that plan.
So what is the total population then in the 33 state prisons?
119,000 in the 33 physical prisons. Then you've got more than 8,000 in private prisons out of state. You've got other inmates in fire camps that fight the forest fires in California and do other physical manual labor in between, and a few more in smaller facilities, some firehouses and things like that.
So we have a governor who, Jerry Brown, who's obviously an experienced governor, uniquely so, and he's, I think, pretty much on the liberal side of politics, that would be fair to say, yet doesn't seem to be entertaining the idea that in order to get out from under these federal edicts on the California prison system's crowding, Why hasn't he decided, for example, that to release the elderly and the infirm prisoners, you know, under parole supervision? I think there's something like 4,000 to 5,000 prisoners, state prisoners, for just drug possession, not sale or possession for sale, but simply having drugs for their own use. There would seem to be, out of that total you just gave us, it doesn't seem like a heavy lift to get 10,000 people out of the system.
No, those who argue on civil liberties contend that California could very easily meet the court's edict and reduce the prison population by making just those kinds of changes, letting early parole for the elderly or for those who are medically infirm, or increasing the credits that people get for participating in rehabilitation programs and turning their lives around. The governor's response has been, he won't do it because he feels he doesn't have to. He's made an argument in January that the prison crisis was over, that California was now delivering adequate care and needed to take no further steps because of that. However, the state has since lost its claim that mental health care is adequate. A federal judge has decided that it's not, and California has not made its case that medical care is yet adequate. They've not even brought that to a judge to rule on. So, but that's the line in the sand that the governor drew, and he's yet to cross back over that line.
So would the fact that the most powerful lobby in Sacramento is the prison guards union, is that a factor in the governor?
Yes. Well, that's a factor, especially in the delicate dance over private prisons and who works in those private prisons. The state does have a contract out for bid at the moment for some low-security housing in-state, and part of that contract proposal is that employees who work in those facilities be union member, or that they include the unions in some way. So that's a tip of the hat to the power of the Correctional Officers Union in California. The correctional officers have their own issues. I mean, they are very concerned about safety of their members. So they are concerned about staffing of any facility and crowding. Any kind of agreement, I think, then the state comes to or agrees with has to in some way include the unions.
Well, just in closing, Paige St. John, this prison hunger strike began apparently in coordination with Ramadan. Obviously, there are a number of prisoners who are Muslims. And do you think, and of course, Ramadan lasts for a month, what's your sense of whether this is going to escalate? It seems already that we're reaching the point where they're going to have to officially declare it a hunger strike. And it would seem to me that the momentum is growing rather than slowing. So this could go on for some time. And,
yes. Well, I think people should expect that this will drag on for some time. Individuals can go without food for weeks without serious physical damage. So at the two-week point is when it really starts to become serious. The question of how many of there are 5,600 Muslims who are participating and requested special halal meals during Ramadan. That means that they don't eat until after sunset, so they can either take a meal back to their cell, or they can, in some prisons, I understand that they are being allowed access to the cafeteria after sunset. There's a question on how many of those people might be counted in the 29,000, but that will be moot tomorrow when we begin looking at the number of people who are on hunger strike and refuse 9 meals. So no longer will the issue of is Ramadan complicating this or not be part of it.
Well, Paige St. John, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Yes, my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Paige St. John, who's a veteran investigative reporter with the Los Angeles Times' Sacramento Bureau. She was awarded the 2011 Pulitzer Prize for investigative reporting with the Sarasota Herald Tribune, where she exposed how Florida's weak oversight of the insurance industry created a financial house of cards for property owners. As a result of her reporting, homeowners were refunded millions of dollars and new state regulations were created. Her reporting for the Los Angeles Times focuses on the California prison system and state agencies in Sacramento. And she tweets at Paige St. John. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with one of the authors of the Failed State Index Report for 2013 by the Fund for Peace.
They strapped across their shoulders and then the kerosene. Escaping to Desolation Row.